Welcome to the fourth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of the 2016 season. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus. How you going, mate? It was a bit of a shellacking on the weekend that the Bombers copped from the Cats.
Yeah, they had to turn it around. The first game we lost, and it was a pretty emphatic win. So I'm guessing you're pretty glad you didn't end up going to that game, although it was in Shepparton, so there was very low likelihood that either of us would make it that far anyway.
Yeah, we did talk about road tripping, but that's pretty far. We're probably missing our best 20 out of our 22, so yep.
Yeah, I won't read too much into it, but Dangerfield scored a lot of Supercoach points for anyone looking toward him.
Has he made his way into a team yet? Surely he has.
He has, actually. But yeah. But then, you know, after 15 minutes of worrying, I took him back out.
15 minutes, that's not long.
I just want to mention, before we get going with this episode, that I have a little bit of a cold. So, if, you know, if there's any small sniffles or I sound a bit blocked up, that's the reason why. So, I just want to mention that. This week, as per usual, we've taken questions from Facebook and Twitter. So thank you for your questions over the course of the day. You can reach us at facebook.com/supercoachcoach and on Twitter at supercoachcoach. Again, we take our questions every week from those sources. So thank you very, very much. This week, the rundown is roughly going to be looking at those top end guys we like to set and forget in the rucks. And we're going to look at just a couple of maybe smokies, and we're going to look at some ruck forwards at the end of the show as well. And we've got some follow-up questions to start off this week's show about some of the forwards that we talked about last week. Before we actually get into the show, just remember you can sign up for our Supercoach Coach Rank Leagues on supercoachcoach.com.au. Just open any podcast and the link should be there. Those will close on Friday night because we need to start getting those leagues out. So this is basically your last chance to sign up. Don't forget, those leagues came third, fourth, and fifth. We had seven of last year's top 10 leagues. So if you're looking to join a competitive league and you've got 10, so you might as well give it a crack for one of them. Why not join us on supercoachcoach.com.au? Yeah, help us make a push to that number one league mark. We're very keen to take it out eventually. But if not, seven of the top 10, if we can repeat that again, I'm sure we'd be very happy, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I think that we would. That was a huge effort by the community last year, and purely based on listening to my advice on the podcast.
I had a poor one last year, so I think, yeah, you do deserve some credit for that good advice last year. And also our Supercoach Coach Veterans application. So that's just a private discussion group that we have that's been going on for a while now. If you're looking to talk Supercoach at a higher level behind closed doors, you can apply. Again, details at the same place on supercoachcoach.com.au. And applications also close Friday night because we need to get those invites out for the start of the season. So it's your last chance for those two things. We'd love to see as many of you get involved as possible. But otherwise, you can just sign up for a forum account and get chatting if you feel like it. The forum's humming this year. I think it's the busiest it's ever been, Mark.
Plenty of action over there if you wanted to come in and get some great advice.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Supercoach Coach Open League. So just league codes are available on supercoachcoach.com.au. And I've also posted them on Facebook. So look to those two places if you'd just like to join an open league. And our Supercoach Coach group. So we tend to look to our Supercoach Coach group throughout the year to give a little bit of updates here and there on how the community is doing. And, you know, we give shout outs over the course of the year. So if you like to have a little bit of a mention when you have a particularly big week, then get on and join our group, get involved and be part of the community, Mark.
Do it.
And just the last thing to mention before we kick off the Patreon campaign, massive apologies. We didn't get that out on time. There's a video that I was trying to get attached to that. And so I thought I'd just kick it off with this podcast. So it'll be on with this podcast page. You can donate from a dollar a show just to show your support and say thanks essentially for, you know, our weekly advice and our work over the last few years. And we'd really appreciate that moving forward.
Yeah, let's hope people can just help us make this show sustainable going forward, because we want to keep turning up every week and hopefully people feel like they're getting value from listening.
Yep. does take a little bit of money and effort to creating the show, and so that'll be much, much appreciated. We thank you all again so much for tuning in, and so much if you are able to support us. Before we kick it on to the rocks, Mark, let's get into some follow-up questions. The first one is from Troy Rodney. He messaged me on Supercoach Coach on our Facebook page, and he asked why Dalhouse wasn't mentioned in the forwards podcast. So we actually did talk about him during recording, but it didn't make the cut on the editing room floor because he was skipped over pretty quickly. So we left him out, but why don't you run us through this week why Dalhouse perhaps wasn't mentioned last week?
I think that, as we sort of discussed last week, that there's very limited premiums that you can actually pick in your forward line. You're sort of looking at 3 to 4 at most, and some of those spots are already locked up. Like, you have Barlow and Dustin Martin really leading the pack in regards to that, and there was a few others that we covered last week that look like they could be really good picks. Look, Dalhouse seems like an okay pick. I know that you are definitely a much bigger fan than me. I think that he might struggle a little bit with the Dogs' draw a little bit. I think that the Dogs' team and their scoring is going to be a little bit fluid compared to last year. And so I think he's probably close to his max price personally.
He's at the upper end of where his scoring, I think, can be. Last year, the Dogs made finals. It's not an absolute certainty that it happens again this year. Libba's coming back and might take some of the midfield minutes. And Dalhouse is a forward that needs the midfield rotations to keep his consistency up in terms of scoring. So there's a few concerns on whether or not he can keep his price up or his scoring up. Not to say that he can't. Not to say that he won't be a good pick or a fine pick. But like you mentioned, Mark, we can't pick that many premium forwards, and because he has a few question marks, that's why he gets knocked down a couple of pegs. So for those of you who are looking at him, who are tempted, I can understand why, and I don't actually think he's a bad pick, but just in the scheme of the season and where we're looking to find value, which is in the forward line this year, he becomes a little bit more of a tough selection.
Yeah, I think that the next question might be a bit more interesting though, mate, about young Toby Green.
Mm-hmm. And that question is from Fozzie Wolf, so thank you for your follow-up question. And if you guys have any follow-up questions to this week or any future shows, you can always pop them on to our social media accounts and we'll get to them in the following week's show. So yeah, Toby Green, after his first round on the park, we talked about him last week and said we didn't have an update for him because he hadn't yet played a game. And of course, he played his first game for the NAB series, 20 disposals, kicked the goal, had 8 tackles, scored 133 Supercoach points to be the second highest scorer on ground. Toby Green, Mark, his midfield minutes looked all right over the weekend, but is it too far to, you know, draw a line from time on ground in the midfield from the preseason to extrapolate that into the season prop? Is that too far a line to draw? Or do you think that might be indicative of what he'll actually be able to do this season?
Well, I think that that's the question that you want answered on whether you'd pick Toby Green, because if he is going to get the midfield minutes, then he's a really good pick at his price, presenting probably 20 points worth of value. He has averaged over 100 before, and he was at almost all the center bounces, and he was just around the ball all the time, feeding the ball out. And I think that that really clearly is his best position. There is going to be a lot of competition for spots for that role, but maybe they played him forward last year in a bit of a development sort of a role. He's always been a stats beast and scored really well, even as a junior. So, look, I think that my mind has probably changed a little bit after seeing on the weekend. I think that the potential is definitely there, and if he can secure that role, then he probably will be a good pick. It's just whether you're willing to take that gamble. If you look back to 2014, after he had that indiscretion and got banned for 5 matches or whatever, he came back and scored 132, 107, 117, 161, 111, 141, and 131 over 7 games. So his potential and ceiling is very high.
Yeah. In his first season, he's averaged 12 points higher than he's currently priced at. If he has one more good showing, it'd be very hard to leave him out of your team just because of his potential. I mean, I don't think he's a guaranteed thing. We've talked about the midfield being a little bit ambiguous with the Giants, but that top end is absolutely massive. In his 5th year, this guy could potentially break out to even 105 type average, 110. Like, the ceiling is really, really high with him. And, you know, that run that you just rattled off before, that's absolutely massive. That'd be something like 120 points that he averaged over the last 6 or 7 rounds that season. So, the potential is very, very much there. You just want to be a bit more sure about his midfield minutes.
Yeah, that, I mean, realistically, like we say, don't take the NAB too seriously, like you're sort of saying, but that's a huge shift in your thinking in a week based on one game of footy. And it was also at a really small ground. Like, I remember hearing before the game that it was the smallest ground that they play AFL on this year. Yeah. And I thought, don't fall for anyone that gets heaps of contested ball. And yet that's what I seem to be doing.
Yeah. There are a lot of people in footy circles talking about GWS genuinely pushing and potentially playing finals this year. All the teams will play a NAB game this weekend, which is quite good. So we'll see GWS play Brisbane Lions in the afternoon on Sunday. So tune in for that if you're keen to check out Toby Green. But I'm thinking if he lines up as much as he did in the midfield as he did last week, it'd be very hard to say no.
Let's get into some rocks, mate.
Okay.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. The first question is an obvious one. It's from M-Town Ballers. Thank you for your question. Is Goldie clearly the number one rock?
I can understand why some teams would start without him. I think if you're starting without him, it's a big, big gamble, and you really, really need to put that to pay off in order to do well this year. I think that he is probably overpriced. I don't expect him to average 128 again. He'd only averaged 113 twice before that, but he has been pretty durable. Even though I think he might drop 5 to 10 points a game this year, I can't rationalize picking anyone else in that spot. There's a couple of other guys that we're going to talk about tonight that I do actually like, but it's just such a massive gamble not to start with Goldstein, because if you do, you're not going to get him in unless one of your rucks get injured. So, yeah, look, he's still locked in my team, hasn't left my team. If there was a rookie ruck that I thought was going to play every week that I could put at R2, I would consider leaving Goldstein out and hoping he gets a bit cheaper, but locked him away. What about you?
I still think that if Goldstein drops his average by 8.8 points, which is huge, he still averages 120. He still clears the next best averager, Stefan Martin, by 10 points, and he's still, therefore, potentially worth the cash. Like, if this guy's averaging 10 points better than the next best, surely he's still worth the cash. He's still going to net you an extra, theoretically, 220 points over the course of the season compared to the next best option, and he's just so far ahead at the moment. You just got to get on that train. The players that we're going to talk about probably see them as potentially hitting 115, but I don't see anyone in the same absolutely monster bracket that he's in right now.
And we have had seasons in the past where there's ruckmen that you just have to have in your team because they are so far above everyone else, like Dean Cox, Sandilands in the past. Yeah, there's a good chance that Goldstein is that player.
All right, next question is from Theo Antonio. Stefan Martin, the second highest averager in the rucks for last season, averaged 110.75, priced just under 600,000. Would you potentially pick Stefan Martin as your number two ruck?
I have definitely never spent 1.3 million on my rucks before.
Neither have I, mate.
But that's where I'm looking to go this year, which is crazy. Goldstein and Stefan Martin have been sitting in my rucks, and except for maybe a day or two, I haven't actually changed either of them throughout the whole preseason, mate. So I just like how dominant Stefan Martin was when Leuenberger wasn't in the team last year. I know his durability isn't great, but he gets so much of the ball around the ground and plays as a genuine midfielder. Yeah, I think that his scoring potential is awesome and he's a really good pick.
It's pretty hard to spend that much cash in the rucks, and therefore I'm looking for a little bit more value with my second ruckman. But if I were to pick a player instead of Goldie, Stefan Martin would be it. All right, next question from M-Time Ballers. Do you see Gorn as a good pick? Finished the year really well and has smashed the NAB series. So priced at 550,000 off an average of 102. Do you know how he's gone so far in the NAB? I think the last game he scored was 112 Supercoach points I have here.
I think it was 138 the time before that against Lobie. So he's completely crushed his first two games, mate. And apparently he's had a really good preseason. I mean, he sort of burst onto the scene last year, had two games over 140 in his first five, but then didn't score over 110 over his next eight games for the rest of the year. So although he did burst onto the scene a bit, he did only end up averaging 102 for the year. And I think his big games sort of made him look like he was averaging more than he actually was. Look, I think he's probably a potentially really good pick. You'd see Melbourne improving this year. If he can keep his body right, I think he's one of the better picks amongst the value ruckman.
I'd probably either just straight up pay for Stefan Martin at 110 or go down even cheaper and try and extract a little bit more value. I see the potential, but I don't see it as likely enough for me to take the punt on.
Yeah, agree with that.
Nat Nui is the other player that we're going to talk about. He's only priced at an average 2 points higher than Gorn, for example. Yeah. And if I was
going to take him before Gorn every day of the week.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, you picked him last year, Mark. Yeah, so I want to get your thoughts on him.
Nick Knight is the one that's most likely to take Martin's position in my team. He started off really slowly last year. He only had one game over 100 in the first like 7 or 8 games and then came home really, really strong and had 3 games over 140 and, yeah, averaged really well on the run home. So I think that Nick Knight, he's shown before that he's averaged 113 in a season. I think that is well within his reach, especially in an Eagles team that should potentially be top four this year. If he averaged 113 4 years ago, he seems to have finally got his body right, and he's now had 2 good preseasons in a row. Very, very good chance that there's 10 points value in Nick Knight.
Is the worry, though, that even though his body is arguably in a better nick to score a higher amount of points, he's still only played 22 games once in his career?
Yeah, but, I mean, even when he's been through those injuries, he's had 20 the last 2 years, so it's not terrible. And you're looking at Max Gorn, that's never played more than 13. Stefan Martin's played more than 20 twice in 8 seasons. Like, you're looking at a bunch of people that aren't really that durable in the rucks for that R2 position.
Yeah. Question here from Faz Mountain about Brody Grundy. Averaged 90.58 last year. His potential was talked up big time, but sort of stalled a bit after a supreme first debut year. Do you think that, you know, this year could be a breakout year for him?
Probably another one that gets a decent amount of possessions around the ground. Collingwood should improve. They're a decent chance of making the 8. You'd think that he's probably got 10 points worth of value in him. I don't think he's ready to push up into that elite ruckman bracket. And if I'm going to be paying $500,000, I want to be getting one of the top 3 or 4 ruckmen in my team for that money. So I don't think he's quite ready for that personally. But he looks set to become a really good player in the future. And yeah, certainly nothing against Brody Grundy.
Next question is about Blitzarv. So Wally Wallace is asking about our thoughts on him. Do you think he'll be able to continue the type of progression he's shown so far in his career?
I think that there's probably going to be more competition for points at the Cats this year. They should get more points overall, though. But his preseason form has not indicated any reason to be picking him. What do you reckon, mate? You're a Cats supporter.
He has the potential to get, you know, more posies than what he's getting now. He continues to run games out really well, hence his consistency, because his fitness is elite. So I do think there's potential left in him. I'm not sure I'd want to take the punt on it necessarily. Next question is again about a Cats player at Taco Bell Skis asking about Zach Smith. Worth a punt? Seems the number one ruck at Geelong and scored okay in the preseason so far. Averaged 80 last year, priced at $425,000. A lot of us picked him as a rookie ruckman when he first started for Gold Coast, and we really liked his potential then. Do you think he'll finally fulfill it at Geelong?
I've got to imagine that he's sitting in your side as that second ruck at the moment, mate. Because the way you've talked about the other ones, you haven't sort of been all that positive about anyone other than Goldstein. So, and you said you're going for a bit of value. He does seem to be the one that probably stands out in regards to the value, being that 420 looks like he's wrapped up the number one ruck role at Geelong, at least for the start of the year. So, look, I can see potential in there. He'd have to have a career best season to justify picking him, though. Like, he hasn't played 20 games in a season since 2011, wasn't even number one ruck at the Gold Coast. He'd have to really, really change his career around, and moving to Geelong would have to inspire that for him to turn out to be a good pick. So is he your number two ruck?
He's floated in and out, but yeah, I think the concerns you bring up are valid. You know, we've still got Stanley, we've still got Vardy. Like, there are a few question marks over whether or not he's got the spot sewn up for the year. You'd be really frustrated if he played poorly in rounds 8 or 9, got dropped in round 10 and had to deal with it then, for example.
Because I think that if you're going super expensive R1 and looking for value at R2, he is the sort of player that you should be looking for. I think structure-wise, if he did have all the things that you were looking for, then he would be a good pick, because just price-wise, value-wise, new number one role at Geelong, like, that's a decent package when you look at it.
probably some parts to his game that don't stack up quite as well as some of the high-scoring ruckmen. He's not a massive disposal getter. He's dangerous around goals, but he's not consistent in hitting them yet. When he matures as a ruckman, he could be fantastic, but haven't taken the plunge yet. Have you considered him, Mark?
Only because he fits the mold. Like, I don't think I'd actually put him in because of who he is, but just because of his price, I've at least thought about it.
So there's a few other players that we didn't get questions on that I just want to ask you about. Sam Jacobs, we've picked him before where he worked out really well. He's about as durable as a ruckman can get. Average 108, which made him the third highest averager from last year. We haven't got a lot of questions or people talking about him.
Adelaide's draw is the big drawback here. It's like they had a really good season last year. They made the finals, performed a lot better than they had in the past, and then now they've gone to one of the most difficult draws. Plus, they've lost Dangerfield, who Jacobs would be tapping the ball to a lot. His ceiling is awesome. He actually is really fun to watch when you're supporting him and he's doing well. He does have a lot of games over 140. I could see him definitely having another 115 season potentially, but there's a few factors why, because he's so expensive, that I think Martin is clearly ahead of him personally. If you picked him, it'd be mainly because of the durability.
It's not the best kick in the world. There are a few things that are a bit awkward and ungainly about him. He's a great ruckman. I love the guy, but yeah, he's got a bit of a limit in terms of what he can do on the footy field. Shane Mumford is probably the opposite of that. When he gets onto the footy field, not just him, but his whole team probably feel like they can do anything. Even though scoring potential is there, injury history is also there. And I think in the first preseason episode, I said I wouldn't pick Shane Mumford because of his injury history. But just thought, let's talk about him, because the only person I could see actually matching Goldstein this year is probably Mummy.
Well, actually, I don't think that he can. And I think that that's purely because of his body. In the very first NAB game that he played at halftime, his ankle was so sore that he couldn't get up. I read an interview with him recently where he said that every single part of his body is sore and that he's just going to have to manage that pain for the rest of his career. And that if they want to get him off the field, they have to drag him off and he just wants to keep playing. But the fact that halfway through his very first game of the year, they had to pull him off is not a good sign. I think that GWS don't have all their eggs in that basket now. They do have a couple of backups. They're much better with him in the side. He definitely has a scoring potential, but based on his body, you just can't pick him.
Matthew Cruiser is the last guy that I've got on this run sheet to ask you about to follow up on. Average 89. He's a previous love child of both of ours. Yeah. We've picked him to start a season before. Just never quite lived up to what he's capable of. And also struggles getting on puck.
Yeah, I feel like he has kind of lived up, but only in periods of like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Just because of his durability, and he just always seems to be getting injured. I don't know whether it's a frail body or whether he's just really hard at the contest, but I reckon Cruiser's awesome. When he is given the number one ruck roller Carlton and given freedom to play as a midfielder and do that and not made to play as a forward, he is awesome to watch and he's a really, really good footballer, but it hasn't happened often enough. His durability is awful, almost as bad as Mumford's. And so, yeah, I think he's an extremely risky pick.
All right, next question is from Paul Maltman. Thoughts on Nichols at R2 with Dan Curry at R3? So shifted over from Sydney and then after that was it North and then now?
Yeah, we've all had him in our Supercoach teams before.
Yep.
Just never really got it going. I'd never actually seriously considered him. He probably does present some value with that because he looks like a ruckman that could average 105 and he'd really need Gold Coast to have a good season in order to do that. I guess, again, with him, there's really strong durability concerns and he hasn't actually done it before, so there's a huge risk and a huge gamble there. The Nichols-Curry option doesn't seem terrible, but yeah, I think that there's too many unknowns in that one for me.
The follow-up question to this is Thomas Ward's question. He's thinking about starting Curry at R2 if he starts in round one. Is that crazy?
Yeah, I think it is. First of all, I don't actually expect to see him start round one. And if he does, I think that his position in the side is reasonably tenuous. So it could take one bad game where they feel like they got too many tall players in the side and then Curry would get the boot straight away. And then that would leave you with nowhere to go. Your options would be extremely limited after that because you'd have a rookie price ruckman in R2 and you'd basically have to trade one of your other premiums out to get in a ruckman.
The one thing you don't want to do with your starting team is pick something so risky that fixing it or having to deal with it not working can take you out of contention. Is that too conservative?
Maybe it is too conservative, but I think that if you're looking for reliable and predictable results, then that's not too conservative at all. And when we had Zach Smith as our second ruck in his first season, it did work. There has been times where it's worked before, but I think that the fact that Curry's clearly the second ruck and his game time is in question means that that's just too risky.
Last question here for the rucks before we move on to the ruck forwards. Is there anyone that you'd consider who's mid-priced that potentially presents value? Are you looking at Lobby, or is there anybody else that you're looking at that potentially holds value that you can be tempted into?
Well, Lobby definitely not. It's quite interesting that we didn't actually get any questions about him, because when we joined back at the very start of the preseason, he was the number one in the ruck duel for almost everyone. Certainly not me, and certainly not, I don't think you are, the Marcus, but for a lot of people out there, he was. And then he got destroyed by Gorn in the first NAB game, and things with Lobby have really quietened down. So I think that you'll still find a decent chunk of people will go with him just because he's taking the number one ruck role at Port this year. Personally, not tempted at all, and I think there's a good reason why we didn't get any questions on him this week.
Moving on to the ruck forwards now. Scott McNaughton's asking about a player that you guessed is in my team.
I guessed right.
Kurt Tippett, 483,000, priced at an average of 90. Ruck forward, thoughts on him, Mark? Got a lot of questions, not only for this week's show, but last week. We got at least three or four or five questions about Kurt Tippett, whether or not this ruck forward flexibility is worthwhile. And a lot of people are saying, well, if Dan Curry's going to be a reliable R3 or Cox, or that looks to be a decent ruck rookie that you can put in at R3, do we want to take additional flexibility in somebody like Kurt Tippett and, you know, Lewenberg or something like that? Where do you sit on them?
I think that the whole idea behind it is great, and if the right ruck forward presents, then in the past I've been very keen to have that option up my sleeve. I'm not sure that Tippett is that guy. I know that his end of last year was really good, including the finals. He came home with 157, 115, 119, 117, and 113. But you got to remember that Buddy was out during that period, and Tippett was kicking goals every week. He had a bag of five, a couple of bags of three. He wasn't really spending a lot of time in the ruck. He certainly wasn't acting as the number one ruck during that period. So, yeah, I think that that's probably a bit misleading. I think that there's definitely the potential there with Kurt Tippett. He has averaged well before. If he is going to be the most dominant ruck for Sydney, he should score all right. I think that he's probably not likely to average 110, though. And I think if I can get 110 in that R2 position, then I'd rather take that than the ruck forward flexibility. But you obviously disagree, mate.
I think he's worthy of consideration. The only thing that worries me is that he kicked, I think, something like 35 goals last year, and he was averaging about 19 hitouts over the home and away season. Now, the reason to be tempted into a player like Kurt Tippett is because they do something similar to David Hale. Like, Hale was never a superb player, but just the combination of always getting hit outs, a couple of goals here and there, a few possessions here and there, meant that, you know, he could eke out a 95. I remember Jared Ruffhead one year where he was pinching in the ruck, and he was averaging 105 because the consistency of being able to get hit outs together with contributing toward goals meant that, you know, he was a really, really viable proposition. And the worry is Kurt Tippett doesn't get enough possessions outside of hitouts and goals, because he kicks enough goals and he gets enough hitouts, but outside of that, he doesn't seem to have enough miscellaneous, you know, handballs and kicks and marks around the ground. In other words, he's not a superb link-up player, which is fair enough. That's not his role for the team, but that means that he can be a bit inconsistent, because in the games where he's unable to kick goals and gets fewer than average amount of hitouts, he can score, you know, in the 50s. That really is enough. You know, a few times scoring 50s across the season, that's enough to drag your average down fairly significantly. So I'm worried about whether or not he can execute to the point where he's a brilliant Supercoach premium. But I certainly think with Pikey retiring at the end of last year, the opportunity is definitely there for him. And I also think that ruck forward flexibility is super fun. I love that flexibility. You know me, Mark. I get sucked into this DPP thing every year. I like the fact that you could select a Kurt Tippett type player And if he gets injured, you get the additional flexibility of flipping him out to the forward line, for example, and bringing in a forward rookie that's ready to be traded out because they're max value, and you can trade them out into a ruck instead. Whereas if you picked a traditional ruckman and they got injured, you'd have to trade them out for another premium ruck. I mean, it's very unlikely that your R3 will be able to be flipped into a premium. Whereas you pick a ruck forward, you know, if anything happens, you can potentially flip them forward, create a ruck forward link for the rest of your season, and have some flexibility in replacing them for the week.
I like Kurt Tippett. I don't really want to dissuade anyone from picking him because I do like barracking for him, but I just want to put these stats out there. 81% game time against GWS, 31 hitouts, 7 possessions, 48 points.
That sounds awful. Like I said, in and out of my team. In and out of my team, and to be honest, more out than in at this point. Like, the closer I move to lockout, the more conservative I tend to become, and the less likely Kurt Tippett ends up in my team. One big showing this weekend, Mark. That's all it'll take to get me on the train. Yeah, exactly right. All right, another Sydney bloke, another ruck forward, moved over from West Coast, Callum Sinclair. Ruck forward who averaged 76 last year of 17 games. He's been talked about a fair amount. Not quite as much as Tippett, but a fair amount as well. I'm surprised he's been talked up that much. I mean, sure, his potential's there, but it seems quite a loose selection.
I do agree with that, mate, but you remember the stats from the weekend I just read out about Tippett?
Yeah.
Well, listen to these ones. Sinclair, 82% time on ground, 15 hitouts, 14 possessions, 114 Supercoach points.
Wow. Wow, indeed.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yep. I don't expect that week to week. I think that realistically, one of the reasons why Tippett is a bit of a tricky selection is that those guys seem like they're going to play half a forward, half ruck. Like, you're just so much better off getting someone in your side like Jacobs, Nick Nat, Martin, Goldstein that are just going to be the number one ruck every week.
Carlton Jers 87, last question here. He currently has Cox at R3 and Sinclair at R4. So we'll talk about the rookies in a future show, but Mason Cox had a really, really impressive showing on the weekend. And it looks like he might nail down a 22 spot if he can keep up that sort of play. But would you consider starting a ruck forward in your forward line, considering we talked about trying to harvest value in the forward line, the fact that, you know, we might only get to pick two great forward premiums, the fact that their midfield is available in the forwards? Like, I don't know. I'm pretty skeptical about picking a ruck forward in the forward line this year, and there's a few people talking about it.
I think I've always actually quite liked picking a ruck forward in the forward line. My first draft team did have Leuenberger picked as a forward. I really liked that flexibility where you have a Grimley or a Cox at R3, and then if one of your ruckmen gets injured, you can flip that player into the rucks just for a one-week cover and bring one of your forward bench players on. I really liked that situation. Everything has to go exactly right for it to actually work, though. I'm just not a massive fan of the more premium-y mid-price ruck forwards this year. I think it's a good strategy overall, though.
All right, that wraps up this week's questions, mate. That went for a little bit longer than I thought the ruck show would be, but...
Yeah, we could have summed it up in the first two players we talked about, Goldstein and Martin, but that's all right.
I have Nick that quite high up here this year. I think.
Yeah, I do as well. I'm scared not to start him.
Last year, I sort of felt like he had the bad back. He was still working into the preseason, but, you know, he kept saying that he'd play, and he did, and he did well. But then he grew as the season went on, and I sort of feel like if his back's 10% or 20% better again this year, and, you know, he continues to grow as a player, like, if he can start off slightly better than he did last year and then build into a really hot finish again, that he'd be a player that you really want to get on. Because the problem about rucks is once you've set and forget them, that's what you've got for the year. It's very hard to be side-swapping ruckman late in the season because that's a massive risk, side-swapping premiums. And
yeah, but you got to remember that realistically we'll probably have to because none of them can stay on the park today.
That's true.
So I'm sure that we've had a lot of examples of trading in the rucks, mate. I'm sure we'll get another opportunity this year.
That's true.
I think you're right about Nick Nat, though.
Good show, mate. And next week, we're defenders. Last positional show of the season.
I've been trying to delay this, mate, because I can't work it out. Although I think I've actually been reasonably settled down there for a week or so. So maybe I will be ready by next week.
I know you've been spending a lot of time focusing your efforts back there. So I'm expecting quite solid insights from you next week, mate.
I hate a lot of the popular picks, so...
Okay. That'll be it. It's always good to hear a different point of view. I mean, people can still ignore you if they want. What does this guy know what he's talking about?
My wife does that all the time.
Love it. Love it. All right. Next week, because it's Labor Day on Monday, Mark, the two of us are actually going to record the show on Monday.
Yeah, public holiday. Woo!
So we'll take questions for the show on the Monday next week. So if you've got any questions about Defenders, I mean, you can start sending them through, but we will put out a shout-out on the Monday. So facebook.com/supercoachcoach and at supercoachcoach on Twitter is where you can send us those. Again, a massive thanks for joining us for this week's show and for your continued support. We got quite a few nice messages last week after we asked for some reviews and for some shout outs from our community, because it's nice to hear from you guys, so thank you for that. And remember our Patreon campaign, that's going to be posted on the podcast page. So if you feel like supporting the show, if you appreciate the advice that we give you and you have a dollar to spare, you can head over to supercoachcoach.com.au. We'll post the Patreon link on supercoachcoach.com.au and on our social media, so look out for that. And thank you very much for your support in advance, Mark.
Yes, we do thank everyone for our support, and the show would not work at all without our fans.
And it certainly got better the more and more we listened to you guys, so we really appreciate that. We'll see you guys next week for the Defenders. Catch up.
Season's getting close, mate.
Very close. Yeah.